Mahabharata, Part 2, Chapter 2, Shikhandi's Destiny, Part 1, The Story of Amba. This was the story that Bhishma told Duryodhan. As you know, I long ago accepted a vow neither to occupy the throne nor to have children who would lay claim to it. My father Shantanu then married the beautiful Satyavati and had two sons, Chitrangada and Vichitravirya. He died before his sons were grown, and I was left as their protector. Chitrangada was killed in a battle with a Gandharva king, and Vichitravirya was left sole heir to the throne. As he came of age, I thought it time to find him a wife. I heard that the king of Kashi had arranged a Swayamvara for his three daughters, Amba, Ambika, and Ambalika. I decided to ride into Kashi on my chariot, prepared for battle. Kings and princes had assembled at the Swayamvara from all over the world, all hoping one of the girls would choose to marry them. Upon seeing this, I remembered that the wise approve of many kinds of marriage, but for a Kshatriya, the best is when the bride is snatched away from an assembly of warriors after defeating them in a fight. I then announced to the kings that I had decided to carry away all three princesses for my younger brother, and I challenged them to prevent me if they could. Then I took all three maidens onto my chariot and sped away. The kings were at first surprised, then furious. They pulled on their armor and mounted their chariots. Soon, hundreds of them were in pursuit. Thousands of arrows showered down upon my chariot, but I dexterously avoided them all. All the princesses trembled in fear. I took up my own bow and turned to face the kings. I countered the shower of their shafts with my own. At the same time, I pierced every one of my aggressors. So swiftly did I shoot my arrows that my foes were completely confounded and could only applaud my prowess. Some were killed, and others had their weapons smashed and their armor torn off. They retreated and fled in various directions. Shalva, however, continued to chase me. He was determined to win the hand of at least one of the maidens. He rushed after me, shouting, "Stay! Stay!" Provoked, I faced him. A furious but short-lived battle then ensued. I soon overpowered Shalva and destroyed his chariot, although I decided not to kill him. I then returned to Hastinapur with the three maidens. When I arrived in Hastinapur, the eldest princess Amba approached me and said, "I had already chosen Shalva as my husband. He too accepted me in his heart, and my father agreed to the match. I would have chosen him in the Swayamvara, but you kidnapped me, and I did not have the opportunity. O knower of virtue, tell me, what should I do now?" I asked her to wait while I discussed the matter with Brahmins. It was concluded that Amba should be allowed to go to Shalva city and offer herself to him. We gave her an escort of priests and maidservants and sent her to Shalva. But when he saw her, he said, O lady of fair complexion, I no longer desire to accept you as my wife, for you have already been taken by another. You were led away cheerfully by Bhishma in front of all the other kings. How can I, who must lay down the law for others, now accept you? You have been touched by another. According to holy books, I cannot now accept you as my wife. Amba tried to change Shalva's mind, pleading that she had not been happy to be kidnapped. She had gone to Shalva at the first opportunity. But the king was adamant. Shalva would not accept her. He told the disappointed princess to return to Hastinapur. Weeping like a female osprey, she thought, what woman in the world could fall into a greater trouble than the predicament I now face? I have been robbed of my friends. Shalva has wronged me. Neither can I now return to Hastinapur, and neither can I go home in such shame, being rejected by everyone. Reflecting on the cause of her troubles, Amba decided that I was to blame. She wanted revenge. Rather than return to Hastinapur, she chose to go to a hermitage and stayed there for the night. In the morning, the rishi saw her weeping and inquired about her sorrow. The lady told them everything and asked them to help her. But the rishis replied, we have renounced all worldly action. What can we possibly do to help your cause? Amba asked that they allow her to remain with them and to engage in asceticism. She had decided that the calamity that had befallen her must have been the result of her past sins, and that by practicing penance, she'd become free from them. The rishis then consulted among themselves. Some thought Shalva should have accepted her, while others proposed that I should marry her. Eventually, they decided that she should return to her father, for a woman must always be under the shelter of either a husband, a son, or father. But Amba refused to go. She said she would never return to her father's city and suffer disgrace. While the rishis thus sat pondering about what to do, the royal sage Hotravahana arrived at the hermitage. He took special pity on Amba because he happened to be her maternal grandfather. He became enraged that I had stolen her and had thus ruined her life. With his lips trembling in anger, Hotravahana then said, O Amba, you have grieved enough. Do not go to your father's house, for that will only increase your grief. You should place your case before the great Parashuram. He is my good friend and well-wisher. For my sake, he will surely remove your grief. Either he will convince Bhishma to accept you, or he will slay him in battle. Only this sage Parashuram is powerful enough to do either. It so happened that Parashuram was due to arrive at the hermitage the very next day. He arrived early in the morning, clad in black deerskins and surrounded by his disciples. With an axe over his shoulder and a bow in his hand, he was a frightening sight. Long matted locks hung down to his shoulders. His eyes blazed like fire. After he had been properly received and worshipped by the other sages, he sat down with Hotravahana and was informed of Amba's plight. He called for her and said, "Child, you are as dear to me as you are to Hotravahana. Tell me, what should I do for you? If you like, I can order Bhishma to accept you. If he will not, then I will consume him and all his ministers in battle. Or if you prefer, I will order Shalva. Tell me your decision, O princess." Amba then replied, "It seems that Bhishma is the cause of my present calamity. I think you should slay Bhishma. I have become so vengeful that I now wish only to bring about his death. O great sage, kill that covetous and mean-spirited man for my sake." Parashuram was reluctant to take up arms against me. Then he said, "I will only use my weapons if the Brahmins request it. This is my vow. I can, however, make either Bhishma or Shalva accept my order. Therefore, select one of them as your husband, O fair maiden, and I will do the rest." Amba had already concluded that all she wanted was for me to die. Thus she asked Parashuram again and again to challenge me to fight. At that time, another rishi, Akritavana, feeling compassion for Amba, also requested him to fight. Because a Brahmana requested him, Parashuram finally said, "All right, I will go to Bhishma to seek a solution by peaceful means. If he will not accept my words, then I will certainly slay him." The following day, Parashuram made his way to Hastinapur with Amba. I worshipped him with all respect. And then Parashuram said with anger in his voice, "O Bhishma, in what consciousness did you kidnap Amba? Although you took her by force, you then sent her away. You have robbed her of her virtue, for no other man will now accept her. Therefore, you should accept her either for your brother or for yourself." I replied, "I cannot by any means take back this maiden, for she has given her heart to another. It is always wrong for a virtuous man to accept such a woman. I cannot renounce my duty out of fear, greed, attachment, or pity. This is my vow, O Parashuram." Parashuram blazed, "If you do not act according to my instructions, then I shall slay you and all your ministers." Parashuram repeatedly said this, and I tried in many ways to calm him with gentle words. Realizing that he was bent upon fighting, I asked, "Why do you wish to fight with me, O best of your race? In my childhood, I was your pupil, and you taught me the military arts." Parashuram replied, "Although I am your preceptor, you have not obeyed my command. There is only one way to gratify me. Either accept this maiden and perpetrate your race, or prepare yourself for death." But my guru's words found no place in my heart. I then replied, "O Lord, what you are commanding me to do, I cannot do. What is the use of laboring for it? What foolish man would accept into his house a woman pining for another? Furthermore, I have made a solemn vow never to marry. I see no virtue in your order. The god Vayu has stated that a preceptor may be abandoned if the preceptor is vain, if he has swerved from the righteous path, or if he does not know his proper duties. I see no sin in fighting with you on this occasion, rather than accepting your order. You are asking me to engage in an unrighteous act only for your own profit. Witness now the strength of my arms and my superhuman prowess. Let us go to Kurukshetra. Slain by my arrows, you will attain the glorious regions you have earned by asceticism. O you whose only wealth is devotion." By then, I was myself infuriated. I then added, "You boast that you have conquered the entire Kshatriya race, but today I will prove that boast false. When you defeated the Kshatriyas, I had not yet been born, nor anyone like me. You consumed straw. He who will end your boast and your desire for battle has now been born. I will destroy your pride. Do not doubt it." Parashuram smiled. "It is fortunate, O Bhishma, that you wish to fight. I will thus curb your arrogance. We will fight at Kurukshetra. There your mother Ganga will see you thrown down and turned into food for vultures. O ruler of the earth, your mother does not deserve to see such a fight. But it must be so, for you are foolish and overly proud." I then bowed before the sage and said, "Be it so." After performing propitiatory rites to invoke the Brahmin's blessings, I mounted my chariot and headed out of the city. Equipped with all my weapons, I shielded my chariot with a white umbrella and yoked my white horses, which can move with the speed of the wind. As I moved off, bards and singers eulogized me. I arrived at Kurukshetra and saw Parashuram waiting there, grasping his huge bow. Thousands of his followers were present, and around the battlefield stood numerous rishis. In the sky, I saw the gods headed by Indra. Celestial music sounded, and flowers fell from the heavens. My own mother, assuming her divine human form, came before me and asked, What do you wish to do, my dear son? When I told her, she reproved me. You should not fight with a Brahmin. Do not fight Jamadagni's son. His strength is equal to that of Lord Shiva. He exterminated the Kshatriya race 21 times. You know all of this. Why then have you come to fight with him? I then explained to my mother all that had happened and made it clear that I would not now turn back. Then she implored the sage not to fight with me. I was, after all, his disciple, which is none different than being his son. The sage said he was determined to teach me a lesson. Helpless to stop either side, my mother retired from the battlefield, feeling anxious for my sake. I looked across at Parashuram and saw that he had no chariot or coat of mail. I called out, "How can I fight you while you stand upon the earth, O Parashuram? Mount a chariot and put on your armor, for I will now release my weapons." Parashuram laughed back at me. "The earth is my chariot. The Vedas are my horses. The wind is my driver. The mothers of the Vedas, Gayatri, Savitri, and Saraswati, they are my armor. Well protected by all of them, I shall fight, O delighter of the Kurus." The sage immediately covered me on all sides with a thick shower of arrows. Repelling his shafts, I saw him mount a blazing chariot that resembled a city. Celestial horses were yoked to it, and it was protected and ornamented by golden armor and decorations. The chariot was wonderful to behold and had been created by his will. Clad in brilliant armor, he stood upon it, looking like Yamaraj himself, surrounded by the personified astras. His disciple, Akritavana, who had requested him to fight, had become his charioteer. And he dexterously wheeled the chariot about as Parashuram called out, "Come! Come!" I repelled another two showers of arrows. Then I dismounted my chariot. Putting down my weapons, I went over to the stage and prostrated myself on the ground. "Whether you are my equal in battle or my superior, I will fight with you, my lord, even though you are my preceptor. Bless me that I may obtain victory." Parashuram smiled. "O best of the Kurus, your behavior is proper, and I am pleased by it. If you had not come to me in this way, I would have cursed you. But I cannot bless you to gain victory, since I myself want to vanquish you. Go and fight fairly, and fight with patience, O hero." I returned to my chariot and blew my conch, signaling the start of the battle. Both of us hurled every kind of weapon at each other, each desiring victory. We then fought furiously. Laughing, I released broad-headed shafts, which chopped his bow into fragments again and again. Other arrows passed clean through his body and came out dripping blood, entering the earth like hissing serpents. But by his spiritual power, The sage maintained his life and fought back with fearsome energy. Covered with blood, Parashuram stood in his chariot like a mountain pouring forth lava. He responded with well-sharpened arrows that struck me like thunderbolts. Pierced in my vital organs, I trembled and held on to my flagstaff for support. I summoned all my patience and, regaining my composure, released 100 deadly shafts at Parashuram. Struck by my arrows, Parashuram fell senseless to the floor of his chariot. I was immediately seized by remorse. What have I done? I have slain my own preceptor. I have slain a virtuous Brahmin. I dropped my weapons and held my head in anguish. But Parashuram soon rose again, his charioteer having expertly removed the arrows and tended to him. The sun set, and we retired for the day, coming together in the evening as friends. The next day at sunrise, we faced each other again on the battlefield. Parashuram shot blazing arrows with serpent-like mouths. I cut them down with my own arrows, even as they sped through the air. The sage then resorted to celestial weapons, which I countered with my own. During the violent exchange of weapons, I was suddenly caught on the chest by a dart that rendered me unconscious. My chariot driver quickly removed me from the battle, and all of Parashuram's followers, along with Amba, sent up a cheer. After some time, I regained consciousness and ordered my chariot driver to take me back to the battle. He urged my horses on, which seemed to dance as they bore us toward Parashuram. As soon as I saw him, I fired hundreds of straight-flying arrows that screamed through the air. But Parashuram cut every one of them into pieces with his own arrows, and they fell uselessly to the ground. Then I sent hundreds more shafts at Parashuram, even as he was countering my last assault. He was caught off guard and knocked unconscious. As he fell from his chariot, a loud cry of "Balas!" went up from his followers. Seeing him drop to the earth, like the sun fallen from the sky, the Kashi princess Amba, along with his many disciples, ran over and comforted him. They sprinkled his face with cool water and uttered benedictory hymns. Parashuram slowly rose and looked across at me. Seated on my chariot, but enraged, he shouted, "Stay, Bhishma! You are now already killed." Even before remounting his chariot, Parashuram shot an arrow which seemed like the rod of death. It hit my right side and sent me spinning. As I reeled, Parashuram killed my horses. Simultaneously, he covered me with 1,000 more arrows. But without becoming confounded, I countered his attack with lightness of hand. As I struck down his arrows, my chariot driver quickly fetched fresh horses for my chariot. A terrible exchange went on between us. Our celestial arrows met in mid-air, and they stayed there without falling. The sky became covered with a network of arrows that screened the sun. Parashuram shot thousands, then tens of thousands, then millions of arrows at me, which I duly countered with divine weapons. A great fire appeared in the sky, reducing the surrounding forest to ashes. As we fought on in this way, the sun set and the battle subsided. As we fought for many days, utilizing every celestial weapon and all forms of combat the Vedas described, Parashuram released missiles which can hardly be described. They assumed diverse forms and came from every direction. I was continuously whirling in my chariot, repelling his weapons and trying to counterattack with my own. Both of us sought gaps in our opponent's defenses, and we both defended ourselves closely. The battle raged through the day, and at night we rested. We were both extremely exhausted from fighting. On the 23rd day of battle, Parashuram fought with redoubled strength. All of a sudden, he fired a number of arrows which fell upon my horses and chariot driver like venomous serpents. All of them were slain, and I was left standing on an immobile chariot as Parashuram shot arrows charged with death at me. As I fought off his shafts, Parashuram fired a powerful missile that came at Lee like a streak of lightning. It caught me on the chest and threw me backwards off the chariot. I fell on the ground a full 50 paces away. Thinking me dead, Parashuram roared like a thundercloud, and all of his followers cheered. The Kurus who had accompanied me were overwhelmed with sorrow. As I lay there stupefied, I saw 8 brilliant Brahmins with celestial forms surrounding me. They raised me off the ground and gently supported me. Sprinkling my face with cool water, they said, "Do not be afraid. You will soon be successful." Revived and comforted, I stood up and saw my chariot yoked to fresh horses that my mother was tending. I touched Ganga's feet and worshipped the memory of my ancestors. Then I ascended the chariot and sent her away. I took the reins and continued fighting. I managed to catch Parashuram with an arrow of great power that pierced him deeply. He dropped to his knees, and his bow slipped from his grasp, and he fell down senseless. I then saw many inauspicious omens. The sky rained blood and meteors fell. The sun was eclipsed. High winds blew and the earth trembled. But Parashuram was only stunned. In a short while, he got back to his feet and continued the fight. Both of us threw our fiercest weapons at each other until the sun set once again. We again retired for the night. That night, as I lay on my bed, my body mangled, being tended by physicians, I thought that the battle would never end. I prayed to the gods that they would show me some way to overcome Parashuram. Then, while I was sleeping, I again saw the 8 Brahmins who had visited me on the battlefield. Comforting me again, they said, "Fear not, O son of Ganga. You are our own body, and we will give you all protection. Surely you will vanquish Parashuram. Here is a weapon which was known to you in your previous birth. It was manufactured by Vishvakarma. It is called Prasvapa, and no one on earth knows about it, not even Parashuram. In the battle tomorrow, call it to mind, and it will come personally to you. Parashuram will be thrown down by that weapon, but not killed. He cannot be slain, but he will be defeated and rendered unconscious by this Prasvapa weapon. You will then be able to revive him with the Sangvodana weapon." The luminous Brahmins vanished, and I awoke with joy. The sun rose, and the battle again began. Encouraged by the celestial Brahmins, I was enlivened and fought with renewed energy. After a furious exchange of weapons, I thought of the Prasvapa weapon. The mantras suddenly appeared in my mind. But as they did, I heard a tumultuous uproar of heavenly voices. "O Bhishma, do not release the Prasvapa missile." Disregarding them, I placed the weapon on my bow and aimed it at Parashuram. Suddenly, Narada Rishi appeared before me. "The gods are stationed in the sky, and they forbid you to use this weapon. Parashuram is an ascetic, a brahmana, and he is your preceptor. O son of Kuru, do not humiliate him by any means." As Narada spoke, I again saw the 8 brahmanas in the heavens. They all smiled and said, "O best among the Bharatas, obey Narada, for this will benefit all creatures." Parashuram, seeing the irresistible Prasvapa upon my bow, and not realizing that I had been forbidden to release it, shouted, "Alas, O Bhishma, I am vanquished!" And he dropped his bow. His father, Jamadagni, along with other heavenly rishis, then came to him and ordered him to stop fighting. They told him that I was one of the 8 Vasus and that he could not slay me in battle. Jamadagni then said, "Arjuna, the powerful son of Indra, will later cause Bhishma's death. Lord Brahma himself has ordained this." And so the battle ended. Severely wounded, I went before my preceptor and prostrated myself at his feet. After this, he said to Amba, "O princess, you have seen me exert myself to defeat Bhishma. Still, I have not been able to overpower him. Therefore, you may go wherever you please, for there is nothing more I can do." The maiden then replied mournfully, "Be it so, O Holy One. You have done your best on my behalf, and I am grateful. Still, My heart burns with revenge. I will now practice asceticism. In this way, I will gain the power to personally bring about Bhishma's death. My preceptor was highly pleased with my prowess, and Parashuram blessed me that I would be without any equal in battle. After Amba had bowed before him, he left with all of his followers. Amba then entered the forest. She went to the Yamuna and performed severe penance. I knew everything because when I returned to Hastinapur, I appointed men to watch over her constantly. They gave me regular reports. For 1 year she stood on the riverbank without eating, emaciated and rough-skinned, bronzed by the sun, her hair matted. She stood with hands upraised. After 1 year, she broke her fast by eating a single dry leaf. She then remained waist deep in the water for another year, standing on one foot, fired with indignation. For 12 years, she went on in this way. Neither her relatives nor anyone else could convince her to desist. Then she left the Yamuna and wandered at will, visiting sacred hermitages of many rishis. All the while she continued her austerities, bathing 3 times daily, meditating silently, and fasting. Her appearance changed from gentle to fierce, and she began to glow with ascetic power. One day, as she was bathing in the Ganges, my mother said, "Why do you perform such terrible penance, O maiden?" Amber replied, "I desire to destroy Bhishma, who is so powerful that not even Parashuram could defeat him. Thus I am set upon achieving insuperable power by my austerities." My ocean-going mother became angry upon hearing her words. "O lady, you act crookedly. You will not be able to attain your object, and because you are so weak. O daughter of Kashi, if you hold on to your determination, I will curse you to become a terrible river in which water flows in you only during the rainy season. May you be full of crocodiles and other fierce aquatics." After saying this and pretending to smile, my mother vanished, leaving Amba in her waters. Still, the princess did not desist. She performed even more severe austerities, abstaining from all food and water and controlling even her breathing. She wandered on, and when she arrived at Vatsabhumi, she fell down and began to run as a river. It is recorded that the river in Vatsabhumi runs only during the rainy season and is unapproachable due to its many crocodiles and dangerous fish. By merit of her austerities, however, only one half of her body became a river, while the other half continued as before. She thus went on with her asceticism, and after some time, the rishis at Vatsabhumi approached her. They asked her what she desired, and when she explained, they said, You should seek the favor of Mahadev, for that deity can fulfill any desire. Amba supplicated Lord Shiva, and soon he appeared before her, asking to know her desire. When she asked the god for the power to kill me, he replied, "You will slay him." Amba then asked how it would be possible, since she was a woman. Lord Shiva replied, "My words can never be false, O Blessed One. You will become a man and kill Bhishma in battle. You will remember all this in your next life. Born in Drupada's line, you will become a Maharatha, quick in the use of weapons and highly skilled and fierce in battle. This will come to pass soon." When Lord Shiva vanished, Amba gathered wood and built herself a funeral pyre in the sight of all the rishis. Setting fire to it, her mind burning with wrath, she hurled herself onto the pyre. She cried out, "For the destruction of Bhishma!"
Okay, just wait a second.